we had this all on tape, by the way. The computer was taping it on digital. And Carol then identified himself, that this is a title for a USC-1 flag, and he gave his name. So we had established double witness, title for a USC-1 American flag jurisdiction. What jurisdiction do you have on your side of the phone? We won't answer that question. We're not going to... But, sir, you have our paperwork in front of you. Well, yes, we do. I said, well, guess what, folks? Everybody's staring at a United States flag in front of you because I know for a fact we put them on every one of your contracts. Now, who is out there and what are your names? Everybody gave us their names. What is the jurisdiction on your side of the phone? Well, we won't talk about that, he said. We won't identify with this here. Then one of the attorneys popped up and said, Your Honor, it's obvious that he is challenging the jurisdiction of this court, and I move for a dismissal. And we wish to sanction him for court costs and attorney fees under 16F. Judge comes back with, no, I hereby deny that request to sanction these people for court costs and attorney fees as their only pro se. He was covering himself because he would have stepped into an extortion. So then we came back and said, you as attorneys, and even you, Your Honor, are an attorney as you have not joined with this court. Therefore, you have come to a discovery hearing and didn't participate. So we sanction you under 16F. We identified ourselves and we've got this all on tape. As soon as we said the word tape, we got a dial tone. And that was the end of that. Next day, we served all of them with sanctions under 16F. The judge recused himself from the case, and first he dismissed it completely. He says this court does not have jurisdiction to hear this case, and I refuse all sanctions against this individual, and I refuse refusing our sanctions against them. Well, we did a notice of refusal for fraud. Now, you don't do a motion to dismiss. I am a solid object. If you are an object, just like this here coffee cup, you will dismiss something that is. If we file a motion to dismiss their action, we say we are acknowledging the fact that it does exist. Therefore, if it exists, it must have value. If it has value, now we have to argue about it. So we automatically give the dismissal, their dismissal, credibility upon our dismissal, thereby dismissing us because the judge will be prejudiced against us. Our case will be dismissed with prejudice because we traversed with their dismissal. So you don't file a notice of a motion to dismiss anything. You do a notice of refusal for fraud under Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 9B. Because the notice of dismissal, that they're going to serve upon you, has your name in uppercase on the gear. They're dismissing a dead person. And guess what happens when you do that? They initiate mail fraud. Because any piece of paper given to you with fictitious names or fraudulent names, the word fictitious comes under Title 18, 1342 mail fraud, which then joins to 1341 mail fraud. Each one carries a 5-year prison sentence and a $10,000 fine. However, when a bank institution initiates mail fraud by allowing the IRS to come in there and seize your funds, that's an institution mail fraud because they're moving the paper without authorization from the court. That carries a $1 million fine. Said so. Look it up in your books, in the booklet there. So you guys should have been in an IRS situation where the IRS comes in there and they go into your bank accounts and take your money out saying, we've got all this authority. They're gambling the fact that you're going to walk into an admiralty court with no constitution. It's a free-for-all, and the judge is going to give them everything that's been successful that way since, 1933? At least 1913. However, with today's technology, based on the mail fraud and on the gear, you got them. That's right. You got the IRS and you got the bank folks. And the banks are not going to allow the IRS to come walking in there, not at $1 million a pop, take $2,000 out of your account and have to pay $1 million fine.
Should be about $1 million account. $1 million.
Well, it's $1 million for each action that they would take, because that's what the court allows for.
Or if there's three people involved, it would be $3 million, so $1 million per.
Right, that's what the maximum, that's just a fine, that's not counting, putting back the money. Plus, then you've got your constitutional violation. Where's my due process? Now, you're in your paperwork, you've got a complete complaint, writ of error, without a due process of law. You've brought your writ of error by a constitutional violation. Where was the court hearing, given the IRS, where was the common law court hearing under the Seventh Amendment, pursuant to Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 38A, giving them permission or giving them the authority to go into your account and take your sweat equity out of your account?
That's even statutorily required.
Right. You can pull that up in a dozen different ways, and you're all going to come up with the same thing. But they're gambling that Joe Public doesn't know about common law. They think the Constitution is dead, and that they're going to be able to drag you into a admiralty court and pick your pockets, because you're going to go in there and give up all your rights.
Dave.
Yes?
What about this thing that's supposed to happen in 1997, where they have this CFT thing for paying income taxes?
Expand.
If you're involved in a corporation, if you have a corporation, if you pay out salaries in excess, full compensation in excess of $50,000 a year, starting the 1st of 1997, you're supposed to sign some kind of forms, IRS, to send all these forms out to people that are involved in business. And you have to allow the government, according to this stuff, the IRS, to make electronic funds transfers from your checking account to pay your taxes instead of you going down to the bank and paying yourself.
Well, if you don't contract with the bank, you won't have that problem.
Yeah, if you don't have a checking account. In other words, they're going to automatically use electronic transfer. All your paychecks go right to the bank. They can't move anything of your sweat equity without a contract. They can't create a law to take your sweat equity without a contract beforehand, because the whole sweat equity program in itself is by contract, was created by contract.
It's like when they send you a notice of levy, there's willful intent, because you don't have contract or approval when they take your money. There's been a willful intent, plus they're going to require notice and knowledge of the law.
That's correct. Now, willful is there's the will, which is criminal mind, but willful becomes more aggressive.
With prior knowledge of law, you give them written certified prior notice of money.
Right.
Certify and return receipts. Give them proper notice to the bank. The bank says, "Oh, there's no merit to this BS," and they sent it anyways. So now it was willful intent on behalf of them.
Well, it comes under mail fraud. Then it initiates a solid mail fraud. 1342 and 1341. But they never thought that we were going to crack the formula on this thing.
No. The junior attorneys and others don't merit your letter. We have your attorneys and you have yours. Yes, we do. You have no idea what you just did.
Well, even when we gave them this information, you know what they said? So what? Sue us under a Title 42 USC 1983 injury. Nobody's ever won one. You know why? Because they did it wrong. The tricks and the traps that they fell victim to were these. One, are you the person appearing pro se? Are you the dead person acting as an attorney for the corporation? You go ahead and file your Title 42, USC 1983, at the clerk's office. That's the first thing she says to you. Right? And she has the authority given to her by the United States Supreme Court to disqualify you at the gate. Okay, we'll take your money, and then ask you that question, stamps it, puts the $300 in, disqualified, and hands it back to you. Nice commerce. Try again.
Last Wednesday, I went up and filed two deprivation of rights suits in Spokane, Washington, and the court asked that specific question.
Are you the person appearing pro se?
I refused the fraud.
Good.
And then I said, do you know what the word pro se means? And she said, yeah, you representing yourself.
And I said, you better go look it up in the glass. That's what the judge told her to say.
Right.
Now, that's not the proper way to address this. When the individual addresses you, are you the person appearing pro se, you do make a statement, I refuse the statement for fraud. Then you snap back with, I am a citizen and party.
That's what I did.
And that's what we did out in California. And the clerk took a big step back, says, I will file these for you. Click, 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 click. Because we made it well known. Now, over in Hawaii, we went to the clerk over at the federal building, and we presented her that. She gave us that answer. And we hit her with citizen and party. She says, these aren't in standard form. I'm not going to accept them. I says, you have to accept them. You are sworn of oath and affirmation to process these papers. Well, the judge told me not to receive any documents that got flags on. I said, oh, now we got a conspiracy. I said, this is wonderful, lady. I said, I'll tell you what. I said, we'll be back here in about 4 hours with a Title 42 action against you personally for violating our due process of law. And the clerks were sued at the federal building there for $25 million for constitutional violations. Then, and the judge was incorporated in the case as a co-conspirator. Then we went ahead and tried, about a week later, we went back to the state court. We did the same thing. Went in there to file the papers and, no, we are not going to take those. The judge said we're not allowed to take any papers with flags on. And she was real smart about, and you can go ahead and sue us under a 1983 action all you want. I'm going, 83 action? We don't do 83 actions. We do 86 actions for negligence. Woo! Did that one. Boom. Instant red face. Goes running back to the judge. Gone about 5 minutes. Comes running back. Yes, sir. Everything filed. Really nice and slick.
So the people get their property back in Hawaii or what?
Yes, they did. Matter of fact, they got 1 year of mortgage payments as penalty because the bank would not accept the mortgage payments for a year so they could foreclose the land on them. They got a year of mortgage payments, and the $5 million that they asked for in damages is still waiting for trial. I don't know when they got that scheduled. I haven't been home to pick up my messages, but...
That happened suddenly when I did mine in Denver 2 weeks ago. He says, you don't want to file this. Yes, I do. Well, he said, you're here at Pearl Sand and refuse to look abroad. And he says, you sure you want to file this? I says, I'll give you my $120 file stamp and give you my copies back. They don't want to take them.
Right. Now, another unique thing happens here. The $120 commerce contract, and it's under common law for Seventh Amendment common law hearing. Now, they're bound by the private contract to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and that clock is running. Now, the magistrate judge, when you sign these waivers, getting rid of the magistrate judge, and they say, well, we're going to take it anyway.
Yeah, the Article 3 judge is authorized me to do
that. Yeah, well, guess what? They burn up your 60 days of time. And they fall into default while the magistrate judge is still sitting on it. Because when he hands it to the federal judge, the federal judge thinks that he's got another 60 days. Uh-uh. They were already disqualified. He didn't take action on it. And now this case is in default. The government owes you that money. And somebody's going to jail for violating, for interfering with due process of law and obstructive justice under 1512. Yeah.
What matter do you put the flag on without the paperwork?
You put it on the upper right-hand corner because everything to the blue, to the right of the stand, to the field, has jurisdiction. That gives you full jurisdiction of your paperwork.
So you specify it up on the top right-hand corner?
Right.
Is it in color or photocopy?
No, you got to have color one. Black and white.
I flew
on Northwest Air, okay, last night. I came back, and guess what the flag is on the side of the plane? It's a nice American flag. It's red, white, and a black field with white stars on it.
What?
Field with white stars on it. Northwest Air. KLM. Then there's another flag up in Boston that just popped up about 3 weeks ago. A white field with blue stars.
Yeah. That was described in secular literature prior to the Civil War.
But you stop and think a second. A white field with blue stars? That's not a United States flag. Matter of fact, that flag isn't authorized anywhere in the world. You know what? It's an equity flag. It's a foreign entity flag. And wherever they fly that, under the jurisdiction of that flag, regardless of what it is, that has no constitution. And if you walk in and make contract with that, whatever it comes down, it's just like putting a gold fringer on this one. It doesn't exist. There's no constitution for that or authorization for it. I can take this book here and say, this is the flag, and put it on the standard. If you want to come in and swear allegiance to that, I'll have an equity court too.
So then the black field
is saying that this airline just doesn't have any constitutional rights when we're up in the air. This happens to be a ship in a sea of air, and the captain on the ship is absolute king. It has absolute authority when that thing is airborne.
I
and they put the flag, their colors on that ship. They're flying their flag. Right. There's no insurance claim that you can grab either. There's no liability to the airlines with a black field and a white star.
How did someone get to that point in...
Law of the flag.
Somebody who's working for that with knowledge in skin, somebody
gets. Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of little tricks going on every day. You know, once you become aware of this stuff, the old wheels start turning in it. You want to get on an airline that doesn't have any insurance, any liability? You know those insurance policies you're buying out there in the airline? Absolutely. They're just collecting money. They don't have to be even now that the thing ever existed. Now you're going to like this one. I don't need this podium here. I'll pull this out of the way. Yeah, we'll just leave it there. That's good. All right, what does that say? Right. When we were I was in California a couple weeks ago. We went up against State Farm Insurance Company, and he got 24 of their crack attorneys together to go up against our Title 42 suit for $150,000 claim on an automobile accident for malpractice. We sued the insurance company because it wouldn't pay out a $30,000 claim, and so we went for damages based on the fraud they had perpetrated and on mail fraud for the way that the case was presented. They, knowing that I was involved, went ahead and produced a perfect document, upper lower case, answered all the questions, made sure that the complaint complied with everything that was necessary to be a legitimate complaint, not a motion to dismiss, just a complete answer. But it said, the whole document was done, but the brackets were put in with really fine ink pen, bracketed the F. Normal person probably wouldn't have caught the F, would have just blew through the document and said, wow, you know, this is really good. These guys have answered and traversed with us from A to Z. We got it, you know, we're going to win this thing. I goes, but what's that bracket doing around the F there? That means the F don't exist. I wonder what the word ailing means. Looked it up in Black's Law Dictionary. Comes under grandfather clause. It means corruption from the beginning. So now let's take the definition of the plaintiff here. The plaintiff here, now let's put their name in. Plaintiff is corrupt to state a claim on the original subject matter. That's what it said, by putting a little bracket around there. If she traverses on the document, what happens? She's now confessed to being corrupt on the original claim that she's put against the insurance company, and now can be sanctioned for court costs and attorney fees and sued for malice, because she just signed a confession saying that she was corrupt. Just because they put brackets around the F. Nice little trick, but we wrote him a letter. Try again, guys. We outlined it for him. Right. Oh, yeah, we refused the document for fraud and outlined it. We also had another document come from the federal judge, and it was 4 pages long, all of which were about 100 of the words in the document were bracketed. And the time we got done reading it, it said that we were ordering ourselves to plead guilty to everything that they had charged us with. Everything that said that was no was yes, and everything that was yes was no, and it's just, you know, like, of course, we're never going to bother you people again, and we're going to be completely prostrate ourselves at the mercy of the court.
And the whole thing was better.
Yes, yeah, and just that's just the way it was written. So I corrected the paper, and I sent it back to the judge, federal judge, and I said, This is really poorly written. I says it's a fraud. I says you got to go back to law school and learn how to write documents properly. I says, and furthermore, I'm sanctioning you under 16F for failing to take this case to court under FRCP 38A and denying us a Seventh Amendment right to trial. And besides that, you're in default of our contract that I paid $120 for. And that went to the federal court. That's going to the United States Supreme Court. And hey, I'll have no remedy. He signed it. There's a confession. I mean, it's they're getting afraid now because every time that they come up against this technology now, it's just backfiring. Every time they put their hand on paper, they're not suing. We're not suing them for what they're doing. They're absolutely immune from what they do. Get that in your head. The police officer arrested is absolutely immune. You've got to start every single injury with a prepositional, constitutional, statutory violation. Preposition violation first. Then you can talk about your noun verb. Okay? Is that clear for everybody? And I don't care what your subject matter is. This thing is good. Not only here in the United States, it works in every country of the world. It will establish the common law of every government and get the gold fringe out of every court in the world. The patriots in all 250 nations of the world can come together now and go after the people, go after the Rothschild for this fraud that they put upon the planet. And maybe we can stop all these wars that are going on. Because these wars are being fought because of the fraud and the extortion that's been going on. I'm going to steal your land. Oh, no, you're not. And everybody's going to pick up a gun.
With the exception of one more. The war in Chechnya. Well, they'll start because they're informed of the truth as to what's really going on. They started told the UN to stay out of the country. And started going the crap side out. That's why Russia made it. And they done one.
Well, the technology is here. I mean, we've been broadcasting this over the radio now since, I think it's February we started.
What's your radio station? Where are you broadcasting from?
No, I was on shortwave with Dave Hingston. And out of Las Vegas, Nevada. And we did a 29 hours with a broadcast that went out, and then he taped everything, and he edited out all the small stuff. And then he has been giving that to six other radio stations across the South. And they have every night, there are six radio stations putting out my word on this procedure. It's going worldwide. And little by little, it's like Johnny Appleseed. We got apples all over the United States today because he planted seeds a long time ago.
Are you internet?
Huh?
Internet, yeah.
Anybody that tries to put this stuff in the internet will be vaporized upon putting it in. You cannot get it. I mean, you can put it in, try and retrieve it, it's gone. The government has got a Pac-Man in there to stop this thing. They got some real good hackers.
Well, they just went and overhauled the whole internet a couple months ago, shut down for 3 days. They invented the whole system in the first place.
They wanted you to all have Windows 95 because they have access to the inside of your computer, so Windows 95. I took mine out. Like, my system crashed 4 times in 2 weeks. And you know what? Nobody else's system went down and got crashed. It went to zero. Just mine. Anybody that's a patriot, they know you're involved with the system or whatever, and that they just send that virus back through there and eats your system, eats your hard drive right down to the bones. So I unplugged my computer, purged it. My computer has been tested to be a 99.97 virus clean. The guy that came in and did it he said, this is the best virus program in the world. He says, this thing will certify if this thing is clean. He says, I've never seen a computer higher than an 80. He says, you got a 99.99 or 99.97. It came up on the clean.
Do you one better? Now, gentlemen, finish second. Here's the problem. One problem is working Motorola, and they kind of lock them like a box. Even in the whole system where everything comes in the computer, gets sorted out. If there's a virus in there, it gets stuck over here, and there's all the other information established.
I won't plug in. Simple as that. Yeah. This technology is, and I'm too big of a. Well, they're watching me.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got 750 cases out there, and every one of them's got Dave Miller Legal Aid on there, and every judge in the United States and half the attorneys working on it are scratching their heads. You know, a funny thing the other day, I was down in, we were down in Dallas. A couple of cases were presented to me from Dallas, and they had James McDermott's paperwork from Madison, Wisconsin. In other words, the attorneys down there, when they were presented with these Title 42s, didn't know what to do with it, so they wanted to find out where this thing all started from, so they called up to Wisconsin, where this all came out from, and Mr. McDermott has been the one who's been assigned to this thing in Wisconsin, and he's been at it longer than anybody, so he's kind of like the leading authority on it, but he uses phrases like boulder dash and poppycock, and I'm going... Something you learned in fifth grade, yes. Radio tapes?
Yeah.
Oh, no, Dave Hingston, when I made the tapes with him, he taped his own stuff off of his own radio show, and he takes those, the information like this here, he gives it to the other shortwave people. They just broadcast them. You can tape them off the airwaves if you got shortwaves.
So they first establish a prepositional, constitutional, statutory
violation.
It can be either. You have to start with a preposition first.
And then begin with a violation of due process.
Well, your due process, I would come in first because the due process is a blanket. It covers both statutory and constitutional in one preposition. Then add a second preposition. In other words, without due process of the law, you didn't have a Fourth Amendment warrant. Establishing a second due process, I mean a second preposition, which then gave you a cause of action under negligence. First you have to establish the knowledge and then negligence, and then what were you negligent of, and then go through the whole thing. Now in the paperwork there under B1, there's 27 points of different procedural violations. I think that's in the B section, second or third page.
B or just B?
It's in my, starting B1 and B2 is at the beginning of the book, is the area that has a series. That's, now, this is a procedure of events that take place. I got 20,000 hours of research into this project for over 16 years. This isn't an accident. I made contact with the United States Supreme Court in 1990, and somebody took me under wing in that, and we traded. I gave them information, and I did research and gave them information, and they gave me information back and forth. And that's where things like the least common denominator were established. We have a patriot in there that wants to see this wants to save our country. It wants the common law back. And so I've been the vehicle by which this has happened. Most of the answers and the procedures in that were gotten by me, but you know, you give me something, I'll give you something. Or give me some verification, yes.
This procedural thing in B1 and 2 is, in your opinion, laid out to flow.
Yes, this is a tightrope. This is a tightrope of flow. In other words, if you go ahead and say, well, I'm going to sue you under an 83 injury, you're going to lose.
Right.
Now, when you address the court saying you establish knowledge first, then your conspiracy, and then your injury, those three things, and they have to flow in that way, they will always answer you, you can't sue us under 83, 85, 86. They're always going to reverse it. They're going to talk about the subject matter of your immunity using statutory cases, hoping that you're going to say, oh, yes, you did. And the minute you traverse, you've lost. Now, the procedure was written in the Bible. And what did Jesus do? He demurred. Never traversed.
Never once.
Never once. Anywhere in the Bible that he ever traversed. Is your name Jesus? What are you going to do with it? Would you be more definitive? Would you define your intent?
What say you that I am?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, you can take any question asked to you in demurred. What is the will of the intent of the question? Even if it's a yes or no, did you say this question? If somebody asks you, did you say that question? You know, you guys all saw me write it up there, and if one of you were to ask me, did I just write that up there? Which should be a yes or no, I'd say, what will you do with the answer if I gave it to you? What is the intent? What is the will of your intent? What is the criminal? What are you going to do with it? Criminally, what is the will of your intent? And how are you going to act upon it? And if you can't answer that question, then I, under the Fifth Amendment, can't answer your question because I can't self-incriminate myself. This is a common law court. I've established my jurisdiction. That's why it's so important, ladies and gentlemen, to establish your jurisdiction. I don't care if it takes you half an hour arguing back and forth or whatever. It's your jurisdiction. Now, we went into court 3 weeks ago in California. A friend of mine was out there, and she was quite nervous, went into the court, and she approached the bench and held her flag up, Everybody's standing. Judge doesn't, by the way, judge does not stand in common, does not sit in common law, he stands.
Hopefully it'll be a long trial.
Huh? No, it's to intimidate you. It's part of intimidation. Yeah, judge will always stand in common law court. Now the judge stood, and Sandra, first word out of her mouth was, this is a Title 42, meaning to say this is a Title 4 USC 1 flag. But the minute she said Title 42, the whole audience jumped up. Everybody was the judge dives for the microphone, puts her hand over, which creates automatic instant feedback, and the whole room goes squeal. She keeps her hand in there with the squealing going on so that none of this can be recorded. And then Sandra goes, no, I mean, this is a Title 4 USC 1 flag, and this is a common law court. And then I'm standing next to her, and I say, I concur with that. Who are you, sir? I said, I'm David Miller. You go sit down. I know who you are. I thought for a second, I'm going to say, I don't feel like going to jail today. I said, I don't have the power to argue with the judge saying that. I said, I am the Sixth Amendment right to counsel, and went and sat down. I could have been held in contempt for making that statement, but I wasn't. Then the next question.
Was he in front of the bar or not?
No, we were both inside the bar. Because it was not my trial, and I spoke out of turn, a Sixth Amendment counsel can only be, only she can talk to me, and only Sandra could talk to me in a whisper, and I could talk to her in a whisper. But because I addressed the judge personally, I could have been held in contempt. But the judge says, I will uphold your due process, I will guarantee your due process of law. And I walked out of the bar and sat down in the back.
I've challenged two courts on the right to counsel. One, on the first one, exactly like you just said.
Uh-huh.
I can whisper, I can counsel with the defendant. On the second one, the judge gave me 100%. I could actually argue for the defendant.
Right, but that's at the judge's discretion. You had a patriot judge the second time around. And that's really important, because the judge is going to talk to you in some codes if you're bright and you really know what's going on. And I'll give it those to you in a minute. Now, the next thing that happened was I went and sat down, and the judge said, well, you didn't show up at the last two hearings. And why was that? And Sandra stood there and didn't say anything. About 20 seconds went by, and I told her, I said, you get trapped, you get nervous, don't be intimidated. Say, I want to talk to my Sixth Amendment right to counsel. So that's what she did. She perked up and says, I want to talk to my Sixth Amendment right of counsel. And the attorney snaps in and says, I object, Your Honor. And the attorney goes, no, I guarantee Ms. Starr, I'll pull her due process of law. Mr. Miller? So we went up to the bar and we're talking here. Wait a minute, I'm not going to do this, she says. You guys go outside. We're going to call another case while you guys converse. So we went outside. Came back in, I told Sandra, I said, you've got to make her say this is a common law venue. Got to challenge the jurisdiction here. You're standing alone. We both identified, but only you gave your name. I didn't say my name yet. So you go back in there and get this jurisdiction reestablished. Even though she has said, I'm going to hold your due process, you still haven't established the jurisdiction. So she goes back in there and she holds her flag up again. She says, this is a Title 4 USC 1 flag, and this is a common law jurisdiction. And the judge says, I see you have your flag with you. Now, this is the patriot judge's code to another patriot, because you've got to have two people traversing the flag. When she said that, the other attorney did not know it. What just happened, she acknowledged and gave the court jurisdiction under common law.
By the judge asking you to leave, you have to reestablish jurisdiction.
Correct. Under the rules, under continuance of evidence that comes under. Now, because we left the courtroom and went into the floor, walked outside the bar, she could add an identical twin, come back in and replace her. This has been used as a defense before, to foil and contaminate the court. I says, now, because we left the bar, you must reestablish jurisdiction when you walk back in. The reason she asked you to leave was a ploy on her part to recapture
her flag
again in her jurisdiction. So when Sandra walked in the second time, she said, this girl knows what's going on here, and I'm not going to go ahead and screw around with this thing. I'm going to go ahead and give her acknowledgement if she moves on it. But then the attorney then came back and said, Your Honor, we seem to have a problem here with jurisdiction. Now, Ms. Zondra here is saying that we don't have jurisdiction to hear this case, so I move for this case to be dismissed, as we don't have jurisdiction. Or would you ask her, is she yielding jurisdiction to this court? So then, because now again, Zondra has just identified the flag and the judge's traverse, so we've got common law venue, but the attorney is now trying to recapture. The attorney is making his effort, and the judge knows that the trick is going to take place. The attorney also knows the judge is going to give the attorney a chance to recapture the Admiralty flag. And Sandra surrendered her flag. So Sandra stood there for a few seconds. She goes, I've got to talk to my Sixth Amendment counsel. Again, the attorney says, I object. He says, nope, this is a common law venue. Ms. Starr gets to talk to her attorney, to her right to counsel. But you guys take it outside again. So we go outside again. We go outside again. I said, every time you come outside the bar, I says, you lose jurisdiction, Sandra. I says, you got to go back in and reestablish it each time. I said, that's why she keeps sending you outside the bar. So when you go back in, that she's back under her admiralty. But then you have to give your name back to the court again to reestablish the contract. So then the third time, I says, now, the judge is going to say these exact words to you. She is going to say, are you yielding jurisdiction to this court to have your case heard? And Sinus says, well, what does that mean? I said, she's asking you, are you going to give her jurisdiction under admiralty? So you come back and you make the statement, yes, I am yielding jurisdiction to this common law court under a Title IV USC 1 flag, and this is common law. And my name is Sandra Lynn. So then she came back in, and the judge said word for word what I was going to say. And I could just see that little smile come up, you know, because I was over to the side. And she repeated exactly as I said it, and the judge put her head down. This is a common law venue. I hereby set this thing over for trial tomorrow, October 22nd. So I'm going to back out to California tomorrow to handle the case. But knowing where the traps and the tricks are going to be laid before they happen is very important. And they are going to try and try and try. She's a good judge. I said, you've got a good judge here. She's a patriot judge. But you have to have 12B1 knowledge of what you're doing. Subject matter jurisdiction over the definition of your case, the responsibility of your flag, the responsibility of the words of your case. Otherwise, you're disqualified. That's why I'm so insistent on you guys getting with the definition, using the least common denominator, having the proper definition. Because to go in and nail down a case under an 83 without establishing knowledge, you're going to be disqualified. Like all the cases from 1905 to 1995, there was only 8 cases accepted, and those were by confession. Every judge for 90 years has walked free because nobody, no lawyer, and no the judges knew, the high judges knew, Supreme Court knew, but no federal judge, state judge, or attorney knew that you had to establish a knowledge before you could initiate an injury. And that's why they never wrote the cases up that way. So, any questions? You know, they're going to be giving you all kinds of little tricks along the way, little landmines. And these are stories of the landmines that take place. Now, another set of scenarios that took place was with Mr. Lysakal up in Wisconsin. We went in, he served a Title 42 on a clerk, and the clerk filed a complaint saying it obstructed her ability to do her job. So a sheriff, third party now, not involved with the original action, files a complaint against Richard for obstruction of justice, Title 18, 15, 12. He's a third party, not even involved with the action. He can't do that. But under admiralty, he can. So under admiralty, they bring him into court. And the judge calls for appearances, and we immediately capture the flag under common law. I go in with Rich, and I give... He identifies the flag, gives his name. I identify the flag, give my name. And he tells me to leave, and Rich says, wait a minute, I got a right to my right to counsel. This is a common law court, and he stays. I'm an Article 4 citizen, and I have jurisdiction over Article 3 common law court. I have a right to my counsel. Judge says, you're right. Mr. Miller stays. So the next word out of the defense's mouth was, we want $5,000 bond. The judge says, Mr. Lascaux, what do you say? I refuse that statement for fraud. I have not been charged with anything. This is a common law venue. I've only been accused. I'm innocent until proven guilty. Bond is squashed. No bond. He says, well, I want a signature. No, he wanted $5,000 bail. Then it was a signature bond. And again, Rich has come back and said, I refuse that statement for fraud. I've only been accused. I am innocent until proven guilty. You can't ask for anything on an accused. He says, no bond. He says, but I want fingerprints and a picture. He says, are you a Fourth Amendment? Are you a judge of both an affirmation? The judge says, well, no, I'm a reserve judge. He says, well, can you give me a Fourth Amendment warrant for my property? Judge goes, you got a half an hour to give it to me in writing. Why I can't order you to pay give me your fingerprints and a picture and take your property. So we went out in the hallway there, and Rich blew out a quick Fourth Amendment warrant. Fourth Amendment, Title 42, notice of refusal for fraud on the judge. And we went back in there and served a bond. He goes, fuck, the DA left already today. Got to come back tomorrow morning.